This is Native Nevada. I'm your host, Richard Boland.
I will always think back to this one trip where we went out to, they call it Winnemucca Lake now. And I think I must have been like 6 or 7 years old. Before sunrise, they woke everybody up so that we can hike to the very tip top of the peak and watch the sun come up. From that mountain, you can see Tahoe. You can see what looks like miles and miles in every direction. And so we get to the top, and I just remember feeling so overwhelmed with, I guess, with the vastness of it.
That's Helen Fillmore, an off-reservation tribal council representative for the Washoe Tribe of Nevada and California.
Having that experience and sharing it with other Washoe kids and sharing it with our elders, with our parents, was pretty special because they also talked to us about, you know, what that means to Washoe people, what the trails from the east side of the mountains to the west side of the mountains and how those have always been used to trade and to travel and just carrying on the traditions that our people have been doing for generations and generations, I mean, including my parents and grandparents.
Helen's parents raised her to appreciate nature. They made sure she and her siblings spent a lot of time outdoors. She remembers, as a small child, how huge blades of grass looked under her feet, the cold solidity of granite. But there are places in Helen's ancestral homeland where she won't go, no matter how beautiful or sacred they are, no matter how much they need protecting.
This unnamed individual had vowed to kill the first Indian he came upon.
I would like to go on the record as opposing your proposal for a name change. This is just another politically correct attempt to whitewash history, and this should not be adopted.
On the site of S-Word Valley, he saw an S-Word whom he brazenly shot through the head.
It is that the term was turned into a slur on the tongues of white settlers who used it to refer derisively to Indian women in general or a part of their anatomy in particular.
From this time, according to the account, the valley was called S-Word Valley.
It offends people, and it is equivalent to a Native American as the N-word is to an African American.
In this episode, we look at the renaming of a valley in the heart of Washoe ancestral territory and how it fits into the larger land back movement.
We have names put into place that uphold some of the most vicious pioneers or settlers, generals that came in and perpetuated colonialism, but also created, I guess, extreme acts of violence. And for Indigenous people, that's not only, you know, a violent history, a reminder of a very violent history, but it's also an ongoing barrier, I would say, for being able to be a part of our homelands and to carry out our traditional practices like they should be.
Recently, though, there's been a breakthrough, a change to one of the most upsetting names of all, particularly to Helen and other Washoe women. We won't say it here, just as we wouldn't say the N-word or other racial slurs. But it was the name of a famous ski resort on the California side of Lake Tahoe. We'll just use the term S-word. In August of last year, the Public Service District for S-Word Valley officially changed its name to Olympic Valley. The ski resort also announced it was dropping the S-word from its name, although it hasn't picked a new name yet.
Valley is looking for a new name. The popular ski resort will drop the word because it's considered derogatory and offensive to some.
We're going to put a new name on it that isn't considered to be a slur by our neighbors.
This may seem like a small change, but it was a big deal to both the Washoe and to the people who live in the valley now. But like tearing down statues and changing flags elsewhere in the country, changing S-Word Valley's name opened some wounds and forced people to examine a history they'd rather forget.
This is a contentious topic.
Here's Patrick Burt, an enrolled member of the Washoe tribe and a history expert.
One that has been argued amongst scholars and now more currently has been contentious conversation among contemporary Native nations. For Washoe, we've maintained through oral records that our territory spans as far north as the northern boundary of Honey Lake, California, down to the northern boundary of Yosemite, east to the Walker Lake Western Shores and also the Pyramid Lake Western Shores, and then west into the foothills of the western slopes of the Sierra Nevadas into the Sacramento Valley.
That's how it was. Then came the settlers from the eastern U.S.
So there has been what I would consider a significant shrinking in what's considered Washoe territory. Westward expansion from the east also caused a number of different Native nations to be forcibly removed or even just pushed because of the push from non-Native invaders into the western portions of the United States.
This violent history is an uncomfortable topic for most non-Natives, including those living today on ancestral Washoe homeland. One way of assuaging this discomfort is to subscribe to a more benign version of history. You can see this in the contemporary misconception that the S-word is simply a word for a Native woman. But in the spring of 2020, something happened that made many Americans stop and rethink their misconceptions. In the wake of the brutal police killing of George Floyd, a reckoning took place. Massive protests led by Black Lives Matter activists erupted around the country. People began to talk openly in mainstream settings about things like implicit bias and anti-racism. Responding to the demands of their constituents, some institutions started to reconsider their emblems. One of these institutions was the S-Word Valley Public Service District, right in the heart of Washoe ancestral territory.
The Public Service District, prompted in part by the Black Lives Matter movement, decided to take on the issue of the Public Service District's name over the summer. And I know it's something that had been brought up in the past. And I think the national conversation certainly spurred the decision-making around this.
That's Katie Hoversmoot. She's a member of the Public Service District's board. The board wrote a proposal to change the district's name and put it on the agenda for their August 25th meeting. The idea didn't form in a vacuum. Around the same time, the S-Word Valley Ski Resort was considering a name change too. It's the area's main economic driver. Officials from both the Public Service District and the resort got in touch with Washoe officials and talked to them about it. The proposals elicited an outcry from the community. A Nextdoor.com thread on the subject filled with hundreds of comments, many opposing the name change.
I think one of the reasons why residents were hesitant around the name change initially is because the valley itself is undergoing and has undergone over the past 10 years a substantial amount of change. There's the largest development in the Sierra Nevadas currently approved for Olympic Valley. And a lot of residents have felt like they do not have a say in what happens to the natural beauty around them and to the world and environment that they live in Olympic Valley. And I think in a lot of ways, the name change or the loss of the name to them emblematized this sense of loss of their own ownership over the valley where they live.
For other opponents, though, it was more political. Here's an example. A comment sent to the Public Service District to be read at the meeting where the name change was voted on. Board Secretary Jessica Asher reads it into the record.
I have public comment from Sal Lucia, who said, "I would like to go on the record as opposing your proposal for a name change. This is just another politically correct attempt to whitewash history, and this should not be adopted."
But objections were the exception at the meeting, which was actually dominated by a level of honesty that surprised those, including Helen Fillmore, who've seen this conversation play out differently in the past. We heard about how the anti-racist uprising, spurred by George Floyd's killing, revived a discussion to change an offensively named valley in Washoe homeland. The S-Word Public Service District met on August 25th to vote on changing its name. Here's Mike Geary, the Public Service District's general manager, presenting his case to the board. He's referring to research previously presented by Ron Cohen, the president and COO of S-Word Valley Alpine Meadows.
And it says that the term was turned into a slur on the tongues of white settlers who used it to refer derisively to Indian women in general or a part of their anatomy in particular. So this was never a derogatory term within any of the Indian languages, but made so by white settlers. You know, so several examples of the early use of the term in literature show it to mean a Native American woman who is a failed princess, lower than a bad white woman and a darker twin of Pocahontas. And so while an Indian princess was thought to be natural, wholesome, virtuous, and proud, and to connote virginity and freshness, the was, you know, the ugly, debased, immoral, and a sexual convenience that lived a squalid life of servile toil, mistreated by her men and openly available to non-native men.
Gary also touched on the genocide we heard Patrick Burke speak about earlier, specifically referring to the dispossession, kidnapping, rape, and enslavement of Native women in the last half of the 19th century. He concludes that the common usage of the word was disparaging, offensive, contemptuous, misogynistic, and/or racist.
It is really with this research that I've done that has really kind of turned my head and made me realize that this is a more serious issue than I originally had thought, and that the name is really much more offensive than I thought. I sort of personally clung to the thinking that, yeah, you know, it meant Native American woman or wife, and there was some derogatory usage, but, you know, there wasn't really any intent either by, you know, the Paulsons and the Cushings when they named the ski resort Valley Resort, nor is there any intent now by any of the ski resort's guests, any of the district's customers. I really don't see that. It's not really a common term to offend somebody in today's vernacular. But that doesn't get us off the hook, I don't think. Through my research and just reflection, the fact is that it offends people. And it is equivalent to a Native American as the N-word is to an African American. And you don't see people using that term, especially non-African Americans. That's just totally inappropriate.
So the document I found was in the Iowa Hill Weekly Patriot from August 13th, 1859.
Board member Katie Hover Smoot contributed her own research.
And it reflects the naming of the valley. And I'd like to say that the primary document that I'll be reading from does use the word S-Q-U-A-W, but I, out of respect for the Native Washoe tribe, will be using the S word in place of that term as I read the document. And so this history is from the summer of 1852, and it was recorded by members of an immigrant train who camped in the valley preparing to ascend the rough, tortuous Placer County Immigrant Road, which ran from Lake Bigler, what was then called Lake Bigler is now Lake Tahoe, through S-Word Valley over the summit of the rugged Sierra and along the course of the Middle Fork of the American River. And included in the group was a young man described as being, quote, wild, reckless, and dissolute, and, quote, belonging to that class of human beings who think bravery and courage lie in feats of treachery and foolhardiness, unquote. This unnamed individual had vowed to kill the first Indian he came upon along the long, arduous westward trek. On the site of S-Word Valley, he saw an S-Word whom he brazenly shot through the head. When the word of his deed reached the Indians, they swarmed down upon the wagon train and demanded either the surrender of the culprit or the destruction of the entire party. The outnumbered immigrants yielded the guilty person, who was immediately stripped of his clothing and literally flogged to death by the Indians with switches cut from the willows which grew along the banks of S-Word Creek. From this time, according to the account, the valley was called S-Word Valley.
Her intention was to rebut the widely accepted idea that S-Word Valley was so named because, when settlers arrived, they found women gathered along the edge of the creek. She felt it was important to show that the historical record reflected the violent history of the word, a history that living, breathing members of the community find too painful to bear.
You know, they say that that word, that racial slur, originates from an indigenous word for woman. But in Washoe, there's no way you can say that that originates from a Washoe word. Our word for women is the Otmo. And so even if it does originate from an indigenous word, there's no reason that it should be placed in our homelands.
The Public Service District Board voted unanimously in favor of the name change. The district has proceeded with plans to phase in new signage and logos over time. Before long, the district's buildings, letterhead, and utility trucks will all bear a new name, Olympic Valley, after the Winter Olympic Games held there in 1960. It may seem like a small feat. The Olympic Valley Public Service District only counts around 600 registered voters. But each year, 100 times that many visit the ski area. That means more than 500,000 people will drive by a state-sanctioned agency that has a new name. It's definitely a big deal to Helen Fillmore.
This name change and the announcement of this name change really creates a lot of space for that dialogue to happen in a much bigger way. That valley itself and that ski resort is internationally renowned. And so for them to make that announcement, for them to be so honest about it, I think has made it a lot easier. They haven't tried to skirt around the intrinsic racism and the history that it represents. They've been really open and honest, and I think that that makes it a lot easier to have this conversation in other areas too. You know, big picture, what I think this is doing is really creating space to kind of dismantle some of these icons of racism that really continue to perpetuate violence against our people. But on the other side of it too, is now it creates this opportunity for healing, this opportunity for people to come together, and this opportunity for WashU people to reconnect to the landscape in a much needed way, a much needed way.
Helen hopes the change will open the door to WashU people actually being on the land more, which will help them fulfill their cultural mandate to care for and protect it. Their homeland has suffered since the WashU were pushed out and settlers came in, overfishing the waters, overgrazing the land, and mismanaging the forests.
What created the conditions that led to these unhealthy ecosystems that have now created this perfect storm for catastrophic wildfire was the removal of indigenous people from the landscape. So when you look at the history of when a lot of these forests, for example, have started to become overgrown, you can date it right back to the mid-1800s. And there was, of course, significant landscape changes occurring at that time. Mining, grazing was being implemented in big ways. But the most significant change was the removal of indigenous people.
Helen has already begun the process of reconnecting her people with the land. Around 6 years ago, she helped start a community group called the Laughing Women. They gather to share traditions, cook, play board games, or they go out on the landscape and learn about medicinal and edible plants from their elders. A few days after the Public Service District voted to change the name, the Laughing Women gathered in the valley for a vigil. They said prayers, sang songs, and shared stories of how the area's previous, hateful name had harmed them. An elder told of past, unsuccessful attempts to change it. Helen looked around at the young ones there and felt glad they wouldn't have to hear and see the vile word as much as she and her mother and her grandmother had. She's also been involved with tribal leaders' efforts to rename the ski resort.
Some of the things that are being discussed are things like ski lessons for kids who want to learn how to go ski, or, you know, even considering a WashU word as the new name for the resort. But I think the other side of those conversations is also, is that going to be enough? My hope as an individual is that these conversations don't just stop at some of these smaller, easier things to accomplish, but actually really do set the stage for not only true reclamation to happen within this valley, but also set the stage at a much bigger level for restitution of indigenous communities back to their homelands where this violence has taken place.
She points out the irony of the luxury evoked by the Tahoe brand. $1 million lakeside homes, jumbo size SUVs, juxtaposed with the dispossession of the WashU people, who cherished the lake at the heart of their ancestral land for its intrinsic value. But when it comes to land back issues, Patrick notes there are practical structural barriers to WashU people's engagement.
A lot of these types of conversations don't really gain much traction amongst WashU. I think a lot of the times WashU people, and for being a tribe that's mostly struggling financially, impoverished a lot of the times. We're definitely experiencing a lot of the social degradations that other Native nations are, such as high rates of diabetes, heart disease, alcoholism. And I think that refuting those things have been at the forefront of the agenda for Washoe people. So a lot of the conversations about what's happening with things like ski resorts being put up on sacred sites, or how they're damaging territory, how Washoe people aren't being acknowledged in those different spaces, I think those are conversations that are essential. But like I said, Washoe people are facing more urgent concerns.
He also notes that land back is a misnomer, since the Washoe have never formally relinquished any of their ancestral homelands. The Washoe tribe has made several attempts to have the government recognize their land rights, notably in a 1997 summit with President Bill Clinton.
Our first presenter will be Brian Wallace, chairman of the Washoe tribe of Nevada and California.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. On behalf of the people from here, we most respectfully welcome you, President Clinton, here to our precious home. And we've held on to waiting for you. Many people have waited generations and lifetimes for this moment to come. And when we look into this lake, we have the privilege of being able to touch and take a glimpse upon creation. And we must not defile creation. Today, we believe the sky shouts now or never, and that we cannot be overtaken by gradualism. So the steps that you described today are magnificent steps to a magnificent future for this place, and something that we're very proud to witness.
That meeting resulted in the transfer of 24 acres along Lake Tahoe to the tribe 4 years later. But that land transfer came with conditions that prevent the Washoe from developing it. And as Patrick points out, this defeats the purpose. He's holding out hope for something bigger, something better.
Washoe people have never given up claims to our territory. Although legal title has been illegally stripped from us, I do have hope that Washoe people will endeavor to regain title to land. And I hope it's in a way that's going to be beneficial to our future generations without the majority of this attempt to regain title to land being informed by economic functions.
Like Helen, he'd also like to see Washoe names restored to Washoe places. Olympic Valley, after all, is not what it was originally called. It's hard to see what happened in the Olympic Valley as a bad thing, but it's also easy to see how much work is left to be done. There are countless other official sites in the U.S. that still bear the S word, and dozens of other racial slurs used to describe indigenous people. One Wikipedia page counts more than 300 secondary schools that use demeaning indigenous figures as their mascots. Nevada schools would have to get rid of such mascots if a proposed bill passed. The 2021 state legislature is debating that proposal as we record this podcast. The new law would also require the State Board on Geographic Names to propose replacement for offensively named sites such as peaks, waterways, and valleys. Olympic Valley has shown the way to this change, and if they can do it, the rest can too, can't they? You've been listening to Native Nevada, KNPR's podcast about the indigenous people of the region now known as the U.S. state of Nevada. This podcast series is made possible, in part, by the financial support of the San Manuel Band of Mission Indians. Producers are Heidi Kaiser and Joe Shaneman. Assistant producers are Jarrett Work and Avery Wyatt. Sound design is by Regina Revizova of Open Conversation. You can find more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm your host, Richard Boland.